It's 7:41 on this West Virginia morning. In response to challenging health disparities related to IV drug use, Kentucky is ramping up their needle exchange programs.
Needles themselves are like 19 cents a piece, and a lot of companies donate them, so it's not like that part's not a huge expense. In fact, it's nothing compared to the cost of treating hepatitis C or HIV for sure.
That story's coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. U.S. energy companies are on alert after the U.S. recently blamed Russia for a series of cyber attacks against power plants. As State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Kusick reports, cybersecurity is something the industry has been grappling with for years.
At the nation's largest grid operator, the report on the Russian attacks was no surprise.
You will never stop people from trying to get into your systems. That isn't even something we try to do.
Tom O'Brien works for PJM Interconnection. It serves 65 million people in the Mid-Atlantic and Midwest. The constant threats are one reason why PJM has so many layers of security around its control center.
So you are going to use your red badge against that and card in. Excellent. Come on in.
Recording equipment is banned, so the microphone is zipped into a bag and left at the security desk. Inside the control room, about 10 people are monitoring floor-to-ceiling displays showing real-time information from power plants. As one manager puts it, this is a highly orchestrated 24/7 effort that goes unnoticed by most people, and that's the way they like it. But the industry definitely did take note 2 years ago when this happened.
But one warning, the first known hacker-caused power outage has occurred. So thousands of people in the Ukraine left in the dark, literally.
Those attacks were widely blamed on Russia. O'Brien doesn't want to get into specifics about how PJM deals with cyber threats, but one of the many lessons of the Ukraine attacks was a reminder to keep an eye out for odd communications.
A very large percentage of entry points to attacks are coming through email. And that's why PJM, as well as many others, have aggressive phishing campaigns. We're training our employees.
One way to limit exposure is by having separate systems. For example, industrial controls in a power plant aren't connected to corporate business networks. And since 2011, North American grid operators and government agencies have done large security exercises every 2 years, with thousands of people practicing how they'd respond to a coordinated physical or cyber event. So far, nothing like that has happened. And it's not very likely, says Robert M. Lee. He's a former military intelligence analyst who runs his own cybersecurity firm called Dragos.
So the more complex the system, the harder it is to have a scalable attack.
Knocking out power to the entire East Coast for a week or a month would be very hard, he says. But briefly disrupting a major city is easier. That's what keeps him up at night.
I worry about an adversary getting into maybe Washington, D.C.'s portion of the grid, taking down power for maybe 30 minutes.
The Department of Energy is creating a new office focused on cybersecurity and emergency response. But deterrence may be one reason why there has not yet been a major attack on the U.S. grid, says John McWilliams. He's with Columbia University's Center on Global Energy Policy.
That's obviously an act of war, and we have the capability of responding either through cyber mechanisms or kinetic military.
In the meantime, small-scale incidents keep happening. This spring, another cyber attack targeted natural gas pipelines. Four companies shut down their computer systems just in case, but they say no service was disrupted. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:45. Barber and Randolph County schools are closed today. Summers County schools will operate on a three-hour delay. On a two-hour delay, Doddridge, Harrison, Pocahontas, and Tucker County schools. West Virginia 511 is reporting a vehicle accident in the Clarksburg area on U.S. 50 at West Virginia 20. Both eastbound lanes are closed there. Freeze warning is in effect in areas of the west and in areas of the eastern panhandle through mid-morning. Scattered flurries this morning, mostly cloudy in the north, becoming partly sunny in the south, highs in the 40s and 50s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. Kentucky ranks in the top five highest number of drug overdoses in the country. It also has one of the highest of hepatitis C, and while HIV and AIDS cases are declining in the U.S., Kentucky holds steady with new cases. Much of this can be traced back to people who use IV drugs, using needles or syringes to inject opioids. In response to these disparities, Kentucky will soon have the highest number of syringe exchange sites in the country. WFPL's Lisa Gillespie reports.
Donald Davis sighs and looks at his watch. It's 2:03 p.m.
Yeah.
The woman knocking on the door is late.
Yeah, about a ring.
The woman enters the RV parked outside a firehouse. This is the Lake Dreamland Syringe Exchange in western Louisville. She gets a small bag with three kinds of needles, alcohol wipes, and antibiotic cream. In the past 3 hours, Davis has handed out these bags to 43 people. Each person will use the needles to inject drugs, and Davis says the end goal is helping users not contract diseases from shared needles.
It's about the spread of disease. Kentucky having one of the highest rates of hepatitis C in the country, you want to bring those numbers down. You don't want those numbers to increase.
The Lake Dreamland Exchange is one of 43 exchanges in Kentucky. The fact that the Commonwealth has this many exchanges is a big feat. It's only been 3 years since Kentucky legalized these harm reduction sites. And an additional 9 syringe exchange sites will open in coming months. That will bring Kentucky's total to 52, which is more than larger states like California and New Mexico. Jonathan Ballard is the lead epidemiologist with the Kentucky Department of Health.
They're mostly in the area that was at most vulnerable. Those are operational active syringe exchange programs as public health.
In 2016, an HIV outbreak in Scott County, Indiana, shook up public health workers in Kentucky. It's only 30 minutes north of Louisville. The outbreak was strongly related to IV drug use. Afterward, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention did an analysis, finding the 220 counties in the U.S. most at risk for an HIV outbreak. 54 of those counties were in Kentucky. But despite the 9 new syringe exchanges that will open this year in the state, public health officials say there's still much to be done. Ballard says half the Commonwealth's most at-risk counties still don't have a syringe exchange.
But yet there still are 27 vulnerable counties without approval from that initial list of the 220.
Georgia Heiss is the director of the Three Rivers Health Department. She says one of the main holdups is that after a health department decides to create an exchange, they still have to get the green light from the city and county. Her district includes several northern Kentucky counties. The region has some of the highest rates of hep C and drug overdoses in the state. And out of the 8 counties in this area, only 2 have a syringe exchange.
That area where the worst IV drug use is only has 2, and those 2 are not in the highly populated areas. They're in very rural areas.
Heiss also says many of the exchanges that are operating are using a 1-for-1 model. This means a person using drugs would only get a clean needle for every used needle they turn in. This is technically allowed under the guidance put out by the state in 2015. But the guidance points out that there are serious limitations with this model. One drawback is that people who use drugs may have legitimate reasons for not returning their used syringes, like if the syringe was confiscated by law enforcement or stolen by family members, for example.
The needles themselves are like 19 cents a piece, and a lot of companies donate them, so it's not like that part's not a huge expense. In fact, it's nothing compared to the cost of treating hepatitis C or HIV, for sure.
Heiss says a lot of city councils seem to favor 1-for-1, despite the evidence against it.
I think it's perception of the public that maybe there's a lack of personal responsibility or a misunderstanding of actually how addiction works.
While it's still too early to gauge whether the syringe exchanges are reducing HIV and hep C rates, the public health workers say people are using these services. Davis with the Lake Dreamland Exchange says occasionally people either cut down on the number of syringes they request or report that they won't be coming back because they're seeking treatment. I'm Lisa Gillespie in Louisville.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills.